Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Saturday morning Bible study. Today is November 23rd, 2019, and we are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we're so glad you could join us this bright and beautiful November morning in Plainfield. So Shahida is our moderator.
Thank you. Our reading this morning is from Miscellaneous Writings, page 148 to 149. It's a letter from Mary Baker Eddy to the Mother Church. To the Mother Church, beloved brethren, until recently I was not aware that the contribution box was presented at your Friday evening meetings. I specially desire that you collect no money contributions from the people present on these occasions. Let the invitation to this sweet converse be in the words of the prophet Isaiah. Ho, everyone that thirsteth, come ye to the waters, and he that hath no money, come ye, buy and eat. Yea, come buy wine and milk without money and without price. Invite all cordially and freely to this banquet of Christian Science, this feast and flow of soul. Ask them to bring what they possess of love and light to help leaven the loaf and replenish your scanty store. Then after presenting the various offerings, and one after another has opened his lips to discourse and distribute what God has given him of experience, hope, faith, and understanding, gather up the fragments and count the baskets full of accessions to your love, and see that nothing has been lost. With love, Mary Baker Eddy.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thanks to Linda for finding that wonderful and very fitting quote.
Thank you. Yes.
It's loaded, I think.
Okay.
Very much so.
Any other comments on that before we go to the questions?
Well, I got a comment. Boy, if that doesn't strum the strings of your heart, I don't know what will. Yeah, this is the sweetest picture of people coming together and uniting and giving of their heart's rich overflow. I mean, it's a precious picture.
I think it's also saying, you know, enough of the outward showing of commitment and all that, okay, the money and all these things. Come with your heart, come with how you're living, the truth, all of that is very deep, I think.
It is. And you know, that quote someone sent to me, maybe it was Joe, I don't remember, but anyway, Mrs. Eddy saying it wasn't quality, but how well her students were demonstrating the science that was what was important. Excuse me, I keep saying that, not quantity, but it was quality. And that is what's important, especially right now. I've heard from people who, you know, they have churches that are down to nothing, but they have enough money to keep it going. But then they tell me what's going on in the church, and I can see why there's nobody there. So,
or they'd be better off without the church based on what's going on there.
Really? And I don't know if any of you have read Una Willard. We have her on our website. But she goes into this quite a bit about how anytime you come to any gathering, you bring something. You're either bringing, you know, joy and love and sweetness, or she calls it like odors, like perfumes.
Perfume, yeah.
Yeah. Or, on the other hand, if you come in and you're jealous, grumpy, competitive, even if you don't say anything, you bring a negative into that group. So, remember, wherever you go, to be the sweet-smelling flower, perfume, that brings something of worth and value, even if you don't say anything. It's your thought that counts.
Yeah, I think
goodness.
I think the fact that you can't just switch it either. You can't just say, okay, this is the meeting time, so I'm switching to, you know, be thinking right. So it's the daily living of it that gives sustains a certain thought, which you then carry everywhere you go.
Thank you very much. Absolutely. We cannot fake this.
Well, and it also points to the science of what is real and what matters. Ask them to bring what they possess of love and light. Help leaven your loaf and replenish your scanty store. Bring what matters. Bring what is real. Give something of substance.
Real substance.
Exactly.
And remember, we're all unique, and you have something individual to bring. And if you think so you're not necessary or important, well, you think again. And that's true, again, even if you don't even say anything, if you bring love, gratitude, all of those things to the table, you have brought much. And it's if what people feel and are attracted to.
And testimonies don't have to be long or detailed. In fact, they better not be. A simple testimony of gratitude for something that God has done for you, if it's said with love and sincerity, it reaches the heart and it leavens the loaf and replenishes the scanty store.
Yeah. You will lose your audience if you get too much into all the details. Sometimes when you have a healing, all the details are very fascinating and interesting to you. And they are. They're each, you know, they are demonstrations. But to go into too much detail is not necessary. Remember, keep it simple and concise.
And the other thing about testimonies, you should also consider how it's going to sound to our listening audience. It may sound like quite wonderful to you, but put yourself in somebody else's shoes and consider from that standpoint what would God want to say to them. And he'll give you the right words that'll meet the need and reach the heart.
And we're talking about testimony meetings, but every time we gather together in any way or any place you go, this applies. What are you bringing? Are you bringing the Christ consciousness, or are you all wrapped up in self? Anyone else?
Your comment about quality versus quantity reminded me of the little society that I joined here in New York, and how loving and wonderful it was with very, very few members. I think we weren't even in double digits at the time. And everything was going along fine, and then we were offered $1 million for the church by a corporation, and everything fell apart. We ended up getting $500,000 with which we were going to re-rent or whatever, and we still couldn't do it, and all that money just got thrown away. And the most valuable thing in the church, which was the bound volumes, weren't going to go into the recycling bin. And when I asked, well, actually, before they were going to go to the recycling, I asked for them, and they said I couldn't have them because I wanted to just preserve them in case we did start up again. But then I eventually did get them because they were just going to throw them away. So the most valuable things there were just thrown away for a pile of money that they threw away also.
Wow. What a story. Thank you, Mike. And thank goodness you saved them. What a story.
But to me, the irony was how, I was just going to say the irony was how beautiful and loving and, you know, it was so uplifting for me to join that church. And then that was the quality, and we had no money. It was just so ironic.
Very true. Very, very true.
Well, it just goes to show that materialism is not only of the wealthy. Poor people can be very materialistic too. You can be easily distracted by the prospect of materiality.
Well, just a temptation that doesn't know any limit, poor exactly. or rich.
Exactly. And that's a case of where it spoiled the church.
I know I've been telling everybody coming back from California, and I'm not trying to bash California, but it was just, we were in this one area. It was extremely wealthy, Silicon Valley area. And we hadn't been there in years and years and years. And of course, I've grown in my science since then too, but I was aghast at the materiality. The one and only sign of church that I saw was, and it wasn't a church, it was just a storefront, I think, but it was called, it was something like the Church of New Age. And I don't know, I meant to look to see if there were two Christian Science churches there when we lived there years and years ago. And it was a cute little town then, but it was the Mecca between Silicon Valley, and then there's a big university there. It was, to me, like a Mecca of materiality. And it was very, very, very offensive even to spend one night in it. And that's one example. I mean, I'm sure there are many others, but it struck me so. I hadn't been there in so long. And I told Gary it was interesting because in this week's Liberator, I write an article about, you know, we were trying to decide whether to stay there or to move back here to be part of the church. And I thank God I got home to Plainfield and I practically got on my knees and wept. So watch out for that. Wherever it is and in whatever form it takes.
Don't accept the wrong invitation.
Right. And then more recently, I just found out that one of the class teachers had his base there, right there in the middle of it. And still, well, I guess he's moved down to San Jose now, but he taught there. It was one of the largest associations. Now, if you're going to do that, you heal the area. But I didn't see any sign of healing going on. It was bizarre to me, actually. So, anyone else?
All right, a question. The readings for today's study are from chapter 55 of Isaiah and the first chapter of Daniel. And the first question is, what is Isaiah inviting the people to partake of in this chapter?
Anyone want to read the first verse?
Okay. Verse 1. Ho, everyone that thirsteth, come you to the waters. And he that hath no money, come ye, buy and eat. Yea, come buy wine and milk without money and without price.
Everyone that thirsteth or strongly desires the truth or God or salvation, that depending on which commentary you read, come and take, you know, come ye to the waters. And it's free to those who strongly desire it. If you're not, and also about the, without the money, you're not, one commentator was saying you can't be too poor and you can't be so rich that you can buy this. It's without price. And it's for everyone. And I thought that was a very good thing.
And what is it that is with price?
What are we talking about?
The truth. The truth in a God.
Wisdom.
Grace.
Wisdom.
Yeah, we're talking about the infinite grace of God, aren't we?
The real peace that only God can give.
Yeah. And again, it points to the science, because he describes it as something that provides all of our basic needs.
I know for me, when I first came here, that I was in need. I was thirsting because it was, in my mind, it was like a life or death situation. If I don't have this, then there's nothing else that can help me, and I'm just going to die. So I accepted the invitation very readily to just be a part of something that was bigger than myself, because I knew that I was drowning. I was just drowning. And when the first, like, healings come and you start to get, like, the first light of truth coming in, and you accept that, and then the more and more flows in, and you accept that, and it's like, here I am now, you know, after years and years of suffering. It's just truly amazing. And I sit back and I think, you know, oh my gosh, I'm going down to the Plainfield Church. It's something I would never have done in my life, would be to travel anywhere to go to a church and be a part of a community that is so loving and caring. And it's truly a miracle in my life, because I was drowning. I was definitely drowning.
And as a result, it has provided all your basic needs, hasn't it?
Yes.
And which abundantly satisfies you.
Yeah. And she's been such a light to other people. And Bruce remembers that first visit that she came, and she came to Bruce's house, right?
Yes, she did. Of course, we were expecting her. We were waiting for her. Then that moment came, and then knock on the door happened. And there we were, face to face.
I sat in the driveway for a little while before I went in.
She was terrified, but it took such courage of her to do that. It took tremendous courage. She had every voice telling her not to, I'm sure. But she came, not knowing what to expect. And since then, I mean, what did you say about her, Jeremy? She didn't want a hug. And
oh, yeah, when she first came, she said, oh, I'm not a hugger. So she just shook hands. And then the next time, she gave a hug. And then just like the moment before this started, she gave me a hug. It just warmed right up.
She told me she will never testify. She would do anything but not testify. That was one thing she refused to do. And of course, you all know she testifies.
It's like a whole different world now. It's a whole different life. And if I hadn't accepted that invitation, I don't know where I would be right now.
What I was going to say was that Lynn paid a price. She gave up things that didn't need to be there, and you know, I struggle doing that. So it's very nice to have such a wonderful example of somebody who gave up wrong things to go to the right.
And she put off the old man for the new, but it's done usually in desperation. And that's why there's such, I mean, we have an incredible group of people here. all different, everybody different in every way, but banded together. I call it the, I heard someone talk about military and how in the military there's no race, there's no gender, there's no all of this foofing around stuff. They're all brothers, call themselves a band of brothers. They all love each other. They watch each other's back. I mean, everybody in the military talks about that. And that's how we are, I feel, this band of brothers, brothers and sisters, I guess. But anyway, band held together by our love of God. And the people here just hungering and thirsting. It's an incredible group that God has brought here. And I read, calls most earnest attention. So when you say ho, listen carefully. And then thirsteth, keen sense of need. And those who are puffed up with vain confidence and are satiated, or who, intoxicated by earthly appetites, do not feel thirst of soul, will not receive Christ because they do not relish or have a deep relish for spiritual grace and the things of spirit. And that is what is so alarming in a place like Silicon Valley, because that's not what they're seeking. They're seeking other things. And it's very, very alarming. And it's not, that's one example, but there are others. So thank God for those who do seek him. When you seek him with your whole heart and mind, you will find him.
Well, I think we've all come recognizing that we had a need, and we came because we were seeking something that would fill that need, and we've all found it, and we're all grateful for it.
And it speaks to, you know, the different people from all over that find our website with all that's on the internet, you know, to be directed to it. It's, some of the stories are quite amazing, really.
It is. And the reason it works is because God is universal.
Uh-huh.
We are all brothers and sisters in Christ. That's the fact. I mean, we all look different. We act different.
It's an open door without judgment. It's an open door.
Thank you.
Uncommon bound. That's it.
And we've discovered our real selves. That is what is remarkable about it. And that is our saving grace.
And also the courage that it takes to make that first step and make the trip and go all the way and be here with this special group. Not only is there no judgment, but there's a great amount of respect for someone who has put away whatever the obstacles are. I'm willing to follow God. I don't care if the rough path is rough or easy. I'm going there. We have respect for that disposition.
Yeah. And it's not any about anybody's credentials or how many degrees they have. In fact, that's often a detriment. It's how much Christ you express. It's all that matters. I think this is a good place for this, something that Dale Wallace sent me about China. It says, it's an article, despite relentless persecution, the Christian community in China is thriving, totaling around 100 million believers, and with hundreds of thousands being baptized annually. Many experts predict that China will become the world's most Christian nation by 2030. The staggering explosion of faith is, in part, down to the mass printing of Bibles. Indeed, China's Amity Printing Company just announced that it recently produced its 200 millionth Bible. The firm's rate of production has increased exponentially In 2012, they reached 100 million after some 25 years of printing. Just 7 years later, they had doubled that figure. It goes on, it says, despite all this, the Chinese government has begun interrogating believers for purchasing faith books online. While it is unclear the government's intention behind allowing this Bible selling to take place. So, you know, I've heard of they're burning churches and persecuting the Christians there. So we can pray that this wonderful expansion of the Bible will increase. And you see here, China, my point being, there's a huge need. I'd read several months ago, probably, another article where people are not just memorizing verses from the Bible in China, they're memorizing books, partly because some of them find it so hard to get the Bible. And then Parthens told me about this book, and you can get it. I got it in Audible. It's also, I probably have a book, and as well as on your Kindle, called God Smuggler. It talks about this Dutch man who was smuggling Bibles into China and what he went through to do this. And part of it is an incredible story. Some of them Bibles were wrapped in poly something. Anyway, wrapped, and then they're thrown into like oceans and rivers wherever it could be distributed. And then people would go out and get them if they could get them before the Chinese communist officials got them. And this is how they were spreading it. It's an incredible story, but it's a hungering and thirsting. So you see, they become the greatest, highest amount of Christians in the world by 2030. And what is America doing? Satiated in its materialism?
Like that Hosea movie. Our gods are doing just fine by us.
Our gods of materia medica, our gods of academia, our gods of
government welfare.
Big government. And it's proven the bigger the government gets, the more people look to government for their answers than to God. That's proven. It's proven. It's been proven.
It's always a disaster.
Yes.
For that reason.
And this is factual. I'm not making these things up. Just study history to see what's happening in other countries where the government pays and does everything for everybody. It sounds good, but again, good intentions minus wisdom equals evil.
But it can't happen in a truly Christian nation, because people have to want to worship the government in order for that to happen.
In Eustace's book, it talks about depression. And he says something to the effect that depression, it's not going to be, anyway, he says depression is going to come when we get to the point where there's just so much wealth. That's the depression. It's going to get worse with the more things, you know, the richer the nation gets, the more depressed. And we can see that today with all the depression medication and people, even kids, children, students are talking about being depressed. And
right. Well, they talk to worship the wrong thing.
Yes. Well, Mrs. A refers to, you know, she talks about the feast of soul and the famine of sense.
Yes.
And that's where we really need to. And I remember a couple of years ago when I was, the picture in my life was I had everything. But I suddenly, some thought came to me that I felt, even with everything around me that looked so perfect, I felt an emptiness. I felt something was missing. And that was the beginning of my journey, which brought me to Plainfield. So even in the midst, you can be either in the midst of having nothing around, or if you're, or having so much around that's just, but if that, if God, you can still feel empty even with all those things around. And that's why I'm so grateful. That's what led me here, was that it doesn't matter how much you have. If you don't have that nearness and closeness to God, what have you got? You don't have anything.
I can say ditto to that.
Absolutely. And when you have materiality around you, you still have nothing.
That's right.
But to see that what I had was a result of God, that's the change. So now I look at it entirely differently. It's to bless others.
Good. Right answer.
Yeah, that's what it said in verse number 2 in this Isaiah chapter, where it says, "Wherefore do you spend money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which satisfieth not? You have things, but you don't have a purpose. You're just left with the things, and they don't satisfy."
That's it. And, you know, when you're depressed and you don't take medication or drugs or liquor to solve it, you will be led to God. That's true of anything. Any problem that you have, if you don't opt out on some drug or liquor or whatever, it'll lead you to God. That's the whole purpose of it. And that's why this drugging of America or whatever else is being done is so God-awful.
That's one thing that I'm really, really thankful to God for, is that with all that I went through in my life, it would have been easy for me to fall into that, you know, becoming an alcoholic or a drug addict or something to try to soothe all that pain. But there's just something inside of me just kept telling me that I'm stronger than that, and that the devil wasn't going to take my soul. I just remembered throughout my childhood, it's like, you can't touch my soul. And that kept me going through the whole thing. I mean, I got to some really bad points, but I absolutely refused to just let alcohol take me away, or drugs and things like that. And I never resorted to any of that. So
that is beautiful.
That's right. It led me here. It left me open enough to accept the invitation to come. I think if I'd have been, you know, hooked on alcohol and all that stuff or to soothe all my pain, I wouldn't have come now.
Oh, no, I know. And it leads to so many troubles. I remember once being told, it might have been in Sunday school, that liquor, all of those things, why would you take it? Because if you do it, you can no longer hear God's voice. And that's the most important thing you have. So that's what kept me out of all of that. No matter how depressed, sick, or anything I felt, I just wouldn't do it. I thought, oh, at least I can hear God. If I lose that, I'm really cooked. So don't ever be tempted in that way. As long as you can be quiet and hear God, you've got everything. But those drugs, that liquor, all of that, it blocks them out. Marijuana, I don't know, everything else they're touting these days.
It's all the same nonsense. Well, that's a good segue into question number 2, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so let me read the first. This is verse 6 of chapter 55. Seek ye the Lord while he may be found. Call ye upon him while he is near. So the question is, what does it mean to seek the Lord while he may be found?
I'd like to add something, actually, in the process of this, because it's had a beautiful connection to what was taught at the round table. We were given those warnings, and the last warning talks about how Isaiah pronounced that the sixth woe was corrupt leadership that was fueled on dependence and drug an alcohol addiction, and he warned that this was going to make them incapable of sound judgment, and that God would, this blessing would turn to judgment. It's not God, but they're what they did. And the enemy nations would be threatened to attack. And if you look at the king that is during this time period with these young men, he did evil in the sight of the Lord. Jehoiakim, I guess, is his name. And because of his unrepentant sin, the nation of Judah, there was invading armies that came in and enslaved them. But the interesting connection in Isaiah, you have Isaiah 3, and it says, "Incline your ear unto me and hear, and your soul shall live. And I will make an everlasting covenant with you, even the sure mercies of David." It goes on, "Behold, I have given him for a witness to the people, a leader and commander to the people." And I looked, I came across something today where it talked about when David was commander of Israel, he had a tender shepherd's heart, but his leadership was bold and out front, and that his was God's prototype of a leader, and the great he did. And it, I just thought it was just a beautiful tie-in to what we're being taught and the importance of these connections. And I would like to speak to, I was part of the association in that Mecca in California. And it was at the very end, I guess it moved somewhere else, but most of the time it was in that university. And I don't remember anything addressed about materialism or intellectualism. And that to me would not be a sign of the leadership that they're speaking of in Isaiah 55:3 that David showed.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. You see, that's why you all individually have so much to offer of your own experiences. Thank you. So we're back to 2.
Seek the Lord while he may be found.
I the commentary that I read, but it just also came to me while he is near. And because he's always near. He's never left us, even no matter how far down we seem to get. He's always near. So he can always be found. There's no time, nothing that we're going through where he's not there showing us that draw nigh to thee and I will draw nigh to you. I mean, it's just right there in the midst of whatever you seem to be going through that he can be found. And his patience, it does say there is a day coming when he will be afar off and will not be found, his patience. But he is our God, is a patient God. he just will never give up on his child. That's just not a possibility.
Thank you. That's a very good premise to start from. That's absolutely right. It's only a belief that he's gone or that he's far off. He never actually is, since he's omnipresent. In science, we know that would be an impossibility. So therefore, what happens when he seems afar off?
We're not looking for him. Matthew Henry said that the gospel covenant excludes none that do not exclude themselves.
Thank you.
Also, the story of the prodigal son. What struck me in that story so much, I love, is that when the prodigal son decided, I think I better return home. The choices I've made here are obviously not a good one. But what was his father doing? He would never have seen him coming back if he hadn't been looking for him. He never took his eyes off him. He never let go of him. Because in that way, he saw that he was there ready and waiting for him. So I learned that part of the story, that he was always looking for him and waiting for him, and he just knew he'd, I don't know, I just love that part of the story.
Well, it's absolutely, and it is an example of our Father, Mother love he has for us. He's always watching the lost sheep.
I found it easier to understand this. It kind of spoke to me a little better when I looked up the word found, and it means to establish, to begin, set or place, to fix firmly. So if you read it with that understanding of the definition of found, it seems to really speak to me a little more, help me understand better what it's asking.
Give the definition again.
Found means to establish, to begin, set, or place, to fix firmly. And it's the root word of foundation.
So is there anything required of us to find God?
I like to read it like, seek ye the Lord while he may be established. When you're looking and you're seeking, there's a point like you're ready to accept it and you allow him to be established in your life. It's such a good sense. He's always there and he's always ready to be established in your heart and in, you know, in your life. And you're looking for God.
Another commentary said, while he may be found, while he's near, acceptable time, the day of salvation, perhaps it sounds like the time when you are desperate, like you were referred to earlier, when you're desperate and ready to receive, to accept. So there's, you know, some times that you might be more ready and thirsting enough to receive what's there. I mean, what good is it? He's always here, and it takes certain times for us to be really open and ready to receive. So I think the acceptable time sense of it is important.
And I think it's why Mrs. Eddy says, what does she say about the pains of sense are more salutary than the pleasures?
Mm-hmm.
When you are satiated in the material dream, you're not seeking him. But truly, in many ways, if you can discipline yourself, and this is why we do what we do. I mean, let us seek him now before we have a nuclear bomb go off. Yes, an agreement. He's going to be hard to be found, right? He might be a little far off at that point.
We can access the internet now so readily. We don't know. So why not get it now?
Get it now. We say, make hay while the sun shines. Don't wait for some disaster. Maybe you've had your disasters, so you've saw him. So things are better. So does that mean you're going to go to sleep and not have your gratitude up there? You're going to start skipping things and, oh, it's not, I'm doing all fine. I don't need to come. I don't need to participate. Things are okay. Well, the road to hell is what?
With good intentions.
Yes. Don't wait for some other disaster when it is hard, when all hell's breaking loose. Seek him now. You found him. Stay with him. Discipline yourself. You know, I've noticed, you know, even with independence, one stick you can break, a group you can't. We stick together. We keep at this. We don't go to sleep. This is why we are disciplined the way we are. There's a reason for this. Because if you don't, you will drift off. And then some huge thing, either individually or as a nation, will happen. And then we're all scrambling. Well, where the hell is God? What happened? Why did God allow this? Well, the hell you say while you were sleeping. That's how the hell it happened.
Where the hell are you?
We have a great big nightmare that we all need to be awoken from. So let's not let it get to that, please. Because we'll all feel he's a little far. And that, and he gets blamed for all those disasters. It's unbelievable how stupid we all can act sometimes, myself included. So yeah. Let's not wait for that. Let's seek him diligently every single day, right now, and let us make good use of our internet. We have it. What happens if it shuts down because we've been asleep? We have it now. We're going to use it. We're going to put it out. We're going to keep working. We're going to keep our love high. We're going to keep our gratitude. We're all going to come to the Thanksgiving Day service, rather be home cooking our turkeys. Because what's the meaning of the whole thing except thanking God? Where is our devotion? Where is our gratitude? Where is our love? We have to keep it high. We don't let the fires die. And they do a little bit here and a little bit there. And it happens when things are going well. Seek him now. Seek him now in our nation when we still have a few rules that people are supposed to follow. And laws, constitutional laws. Seek him now. Don't wait till we lose everything and then act shell-shocked.
Thank you so much for that, because that's what I was thinking about, that discussion with China, is that the government there is absolutely cutting off the closeness to God by eliminating the Bible. And that reminds me of Great Britain when the King James Bible was written there, and they didn't want it in the language that the people could understand, because then they couldn't hoodwink them anymore. But one of the things that really struck me reading this commentary on chapter 55 was that preceding to chapters 53 is about Christ Jesus prophesying, and 54 is prophesying about Mary Baker Eddy. And it talks about, "Ho, ye come to the water that thirsteth." And it's like, well, and exactly like you've been saying, when Christ Jesus is near and Mary Baker Eddy are near, we'd better well stick with them and learn from them, and as long as they're near and before they get separated where we can't see them anymore.
That's right. We've got our book. We've got everything. We've got the internet. We've got it all. Use it. And mainly, because if you love it and it has blessed you, then the next step is to go out and bless others. If you just stall and say, "Wow, this is great. My money, I got money, I got health, I got everything I need, and I'll just go to sleep." And the next thing you know, you're sipping liquor and drugs and everything else, because that's not what makes you happy. Once you get it, you start giving it back. That's what makes you happy. Nothing else does. Because this is why we were created.
You give what you get.
Yeah, I have to say that there was no outreach of Christian Science that I really could witness, or that I demonstrated before coming to Plainfield. And it was just, it seems crazy now that it wasn't stressed in Sunday school or in church. In the Boston church, that, you know, give out Christian Science and health and share. We were all scared to talk about this. And, you know, it's just been, I just wasn't comfortable. And, you know, coming to Plainfield, it just all became crystal clear that if you're not sharing and reaching out and loving and demonstrating, you're just completely self-absorbed. I was self-absorbed completely until I came to Plainfield. And the whole idea of sharing and giving and loving our neighbor, and it's just, it was so new to get out of myself. It seems ridiculous now when I think back. Because the whole purpose of Christianity is to share and to spread the word and spread the gospel, not be comfortable in your little bubble with your friends, which is, you know, kind of what we experienced. Anyway, I thank this church for changing getting me out of the selfishness. And, you know, I'm keeping a science and health in the back seat of my car, because if I'm out there and I see a need, I don't want to not have it with me, you know, a science and health to give away. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you. And everywhere Suzanne goes, she's giving. She just got back from Paris and gave one out. She bought a French one to give out to someone. Everywhere she goes, she's doing that. And when you have that in your heart, you will find opportunities to share it. God will bring it, bring them to you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And this brings up a really important point. This is why our church had to be kicked out of that organization in Boston, because we were being smothered by the organization in Boston. And we refused to be smothered. And when they realized they couldn't smother us, they kicked us out. This human organization is a smotherer. You cannot violate the church manual and practice Christian Science. They are violating the church manual so blatantly, so badly, that they cannot practice Christian Science. That is why everybody in that organization is frightened, feels guilty. There's no love in that organization because it's violating the church manual.
And our next liberator will be on our manual, the 88th edition.
But it's important that we understand why that organization is failing. Because if we don't understand why, then we won't be able to fulfill God's purpose that He has for us.
And people still, you know, they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear about it.
But there are really good people within that organization that are trying as they may to practice Christian Science and to be good Christians. They need to be freed from the human disobedience of the manual.
Thank you.
So our next question?
Yes.
About four young Hebrew men who refuse to be smothered.
Good.
How did they follow Isaiah's invitation? What was the result?
Well, they were given knowledge from God, understanding, and Daniel even understood visions and dreams of all kinds, which helped everyone.
They refused the materialism of the king's meat and the king's wine. They refused to acknowledge any reality, any life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. And they ate pulse for 10 days. And they were fairer and healthier than everybody else.
And this is the apostolic command to come out from the material world and be separate. The pressure of that. And as we approach this season, we are going to have to be willing to do that as well. Come out from the material world, to refuse to indulge in the materialism of this season, to keep our observing Christmas in quietude, to make sure this Thanksgiving is for thanking and praising God first and foremost. And as Gary said, I mean, you know, and as Shahida put it well, the smothering of the organization, to come out from that and be separate. Are you coming out? And I maintain, if you have any pressure problems, whether it's pressure headaches, heart pressure, blood pressure, whatever pressure, you look at that one statement that Mrs. Eddy says and ask yourself, how have I not come out from the material world and have been separate? I will guarantee if you pay attention to that, whatever pressure problems you have will go.
I think that's the only place in her writings where she even uses that word pressure.
It is.
It's the only place in the textbook.
Yeah. And you hear that word stress all the time too, in coming out of people, stress over this and stress.
Yeah.
It's that pressure. It's that come out from the. And I was going to say that Daniel and his friend, you know, they were in a foreign country. Mm-hmm. And they were in it, but they weren't of it. They didn't take on anything that was now we're in this other country. So now we have. No, they stayed separate. And because of that, it was their protection for what was to come. The fiery furnace and Daniel in the lion's den. It was just all the preparation his refusal, their refusal to be anything but other than God's representatives. And that's what saved them in their future trials. So it was hungering for their God, no matter where they were, foreign country or not. And it also brought them out of that, back to their own country. So it was all... So anyway,
that's a great point. They refused to be mesmerized. They kept their thoughts singular.
That's right. They did. Yeah. They focused and refused to be mesmerized. Thank you. They also sought God while he could be found. Step by step, they were seeking him. So then when they were in the fiery furnace, it wasn't like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do now? They had been living it and demonstrating it step by step. So when they found themselves in the fiery furnace, okay, God will take care of me. That's how it works.
Yeah. And Nebuchadnezzar became a follower of their God.
Yes.
Yeah, you're committed to something. You will never give up no matter what. It's so beautiful what their demonstration was.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful example. And we're not even being asked to do anything quite as extreme. Thank God. But, you know, this is what it's happening in China and elsewhere. This is why, thank God, we have this freedom to read and study and have our internet and all these things. Let's not lose it.
And each one of us will be persecuted in a different way when you are willing to come out from the material world and be separate.
Yeah.
There will be resistance. Somebody's not going to like it. So...
probably big time they're not going to like him.
So be ready.
Everyone you know.
Woodwork.
Yeah.
Things you don't even know start coming out.
Yep.
But none of us is going to have to be put in the lion's den or in the fiery furnace. So what we have to go through is nothing compared to what these guys had to go through.
And because of playing field, we don't have to face it alone.
That's right.
And you have a band of brothers.
Band of brothers, yes. And we are united. We are a family. We are one. And we're always here.
And one with God is a majority.
It is.
I think there are different levels of the lion's den and the fiery furnace, though, because what it feels like sometimes is like, what? Am I going to live or am I not? But again, the point, the beautiful point is that here is a church where you will be taught and be gently led out of this whole thing, if you commit to it.
Yeah, you can't dabble. And that's very true. We might not be actually thrown into the fiery furnace, but sometimes it sure feels like we're in a fiery furnace. And that's when we have to trust and keep walking. What did Churchill say when you're in hell? What?
If you're going through hell, keep going.
Yeah, keep going.
Keep walking.
Keep going.
or through the, in the 23rd Psalm, what does it say? The go through the valley of the shadow. It doesn't say stop and have a meal or take a rest. It's going through. It's, you know, there is a, you're not going to stay there. It's, you will get through it if we trust.
Yes.
And keep walking.
Yeah.
One step enough for me.
Yeah.
I think Daniel and the other three also proves the point of seek ye while they are close, because they united in their efforts. They didn't try to do it all one at a time on their own.
It's true.
Uh-huh. So trust your spiritual sense.
Yeah.
And seek the Lord.
That's how God speaks to us.
We kind of answered both questions, Shahida, yeah. I think.
Yes, we did. The last question was, how can we follow Isaiah's invitation today? And it's kind of been discussed throughout the previous three questions, but does anyone want to add anything?
We're off to a good start just being here.
Well, that's
I
true.
Think this has been a wonderful Bible study. This has just been a wealth of, I thank you for it. It's wonderful.
It was very inspired, Shahida. Inspired question.
Great job. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.